You see two men walking down the street. One is strolling. He's just out for a stroll. And the other has some place that he's going. How can you tell? There's something different about the way each one is walking, isn't there? You know, one's just out for a casual stroll, and you know one has his face set on going to a particular location, and you want to stay out of his way, so to speak. Picture Jesus walking as shown in Luke chapter 9. As I read it, see him walking. Think about the difference between his walking in this text as opposed to if he was just out on a stroll. Luke 9, starting at verse 51. Now it came to pass, when the time had come for him to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem, and sent messengers before his face. And as they went, they entered a village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. But they did not receive him because his face was set for the journey to Jerusalem. But how do you see his body language? He has something on his mind, doesn't he? He has a goal. He has a place that he's reaching. Yes, he has to stop along the way. That's why he sent his messengers to prepare for him in this particular village of the Samaritans. But it's obvious he doesn't plan on staying there. He has someplace else more important to go. I just kind of tuck away that thought for a while. Walking is wonderful. Many people will not walk down the street even a few houses, but will get in their car and drive down there. You know, so many things are missed by not walking. I really think a regular walk is a great blessing. Your health improves. You don't worry about gas prices. You see more things. You meet more people. You enjoy life. Helen Keller said, "Keep your face to the sunshine and you cannot see the shadows." She took a figure of speech. She took a literal action, I should say, that of walking, and made a life illustration out of it. And I think the Bible does the same thing. Why am I then talking about walking? Well, because the Bible uses walking as a metaphor, as a figure of speech, to represent living. And why does the Bible use walking to represent living? Living is a journey, even as walking is. You start someplace walking and you want to go someplace. Life, we start out with birth and we're heading towards death. It's a journey and we're on a walk. Now, let's take these thoughts and watch what happens in Philippians chapter 3. I'm going to start off first with verse 15. Paul writes, "Therefore, let us, as many as are mature, have this mind. If in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you." Paul refers to this mind, or this thinking. And I believe that he's referring back to verses 1 through 14, which we've already covered in the past couple of weeks. Forget the past and move on. We have not yet arrived, but we have yet to receive the prize that he spoke about in verse 14. And we don't receive that prize until we reach heaven. So keep walking, keep on going. "Therefore, press on and do not let anything distract you." Do not let the past in particular distract you. from what is before. Remember how we talked about walking last week, I think especially last Sunday evening, that as you walk, you can't just be looking behind you constantly. You're going to run into something. You have to focus on what's before you. And that's what Paul's urging us to do. No matter what the past is, good or bad, we can't focus on it. We have to look to the future. We have to keep on walking until we reach our destination. And so then Paul says, and if in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you. You see, Paul knows that not everyone thinks the way he's just illustrated in verses 1 through 14. So he says, if you think differently, God will show you otherwise. So what Paul does is he turns these people over to God. There's only so much that Paul can do. You've tried to teach someone before. There's only so much you can say. Eventually, they have to learn by experience or some other method that will show them that the way they're thinking or the way they're walking in life is just not going to cut it. I think what Paul says here fits in perfectly with the theme of what I believe is a theme of the book of Philippians that he revealed clear back in chapter 1, verse 6. That is, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. These brethren had started on a journey walking with the Lord. He was not going to abandon them somewhere along the way, but he's going to stay with them till the very end. But it's up to us to keep our eyes focused on the future. God wants you and I to grow and to receive the prize. And so He has not left us on our own. Now, for the people who think they have already arrived, Paul says, God will show them otherwise. Again, it might be through their own experience. They will discover that they haven't arrived. They still have a great deal of growing to experience. Or maybe some other passage of Scripture will convict them. Or perhaps a wise brother or sister will convict that person. Now let's look at verse 16, Philippians 3. Nevertheless, to the degree that we have already attained, let us walk by the same rule. Let us be of the same mind. We are at different levels. However, we have all grown. Well, how did you attain that growth? Do you know what to do from here? Okay, yes, I've grown over the years. What do I do from this point on? Well, listen to what Paul says. He says, let us walk by the same rule. Well, how have I achieved my personal growth already? He says, keep doing the same thing. It's helped you to grow. Continue on that path. It got you to your present state of maturity. It will help you to reach the next level and the final level of growth. Perhaps you have not applied fully the course that you've been on. So then, seek to keep applying it. Make full application of what the Scriptures are teaching. You can't go wrong. Now, when Paul says walk here, he's referring to walking in line or walking by a standard. And it's not just a stroll out in the country, but you're walking home on the shortest route on the best trail. Don't get diverted from it. Do not be discouraged. You're going to make it. The best thing to do is to walk with God in the way that a little girl walked with her father. They were walking home and it got dark. And she looked up at her dad and asked him to take hold of her hand because, as she explained, she could only hold a little bit of his hand, but he could hold all of her hand. And that's how God is with us. reach up to him on your walk, and he'll enclose you. Let us be like Enoch, who walked with God, of which a little girl again gave a very interesting interpretation. When she was done with Bible class, she asked her mother, or her mother asked her, I should say, what did you learn today in class? And she said, "Don't you know, Mom, one day they went for an extra long walk, and they walked on and on until God said to Enoch, 'You are a long way from home. You had better just come in and stay.' And he went." Walk with God all the way. He's taking care of you now. And you know, when we get to the end, he won't abandon us. He'll be right with us. If you walk with God, you'll come out smelling like a rose, although you live in a world inhabited by skunks. A man by the name of Charles Weigel, who wrote our first song that we sang this morning, "No One Ever Cared for Me Like Jesus," was going to be preaching in Pasadena, California, many years ago, the earlier part of the 20th century. And on one morning, he had the opportunity to walk through some of the rose gardens that are in Pasadena. And being just surrounded with these roses, he started to smell like roses, although he didn't know it. When he arrived at the conference, a man sitting by him could smell the aroma of the roses. And so he said to him, "Dr. Weigel, I know where you've been. You toured one of our lovely gardens, for I can smell the pleasing aroma on your clothing." To which he said, "My prayer is that I may walk so closely with the Lord that the fragrance of His grace will pervade my being. I want them to know by my words, actions, and songs that I have been with Jesus." And even as they could tell where he had been walking literally, so people can tell where we've been walking in the Spirit if we walk with Jesus every day. Now, look at how others walk. Look at Philippians 3 and verse 17. Look at how others walk Christianity and follow their example. Paul now says, "Brethren, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern." First, we noted in chapter 2 that we have Jesus as a pattern. We've also seen that we can follow Paul as an example. But now Paul here, when he speaks about having him as a pattern or as an example to follow, he of course has to be very careful in what he says or how he conducts his life, because people are going to take him for his word. I can follow this man. I can watch him in action. I can listen to his words. I can see how he treats other people. I can see how he deals with the difficulties of life, and therefore learn from him, not so much how Paul deals with life, but how Jesus would. And that's why you'll see Paul throughout the Scriptures speaking about the self-discipline that he would argue. Or listen to this from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Where he explains why we are able to follow his example. And it's not because Paul thinks he's something great or that he's setting himself up to be the example of a Christian. But listen to this in 1 Corinthians 10, starting at verse 32. He writes, "Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks, or to the church of God, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ." It is possible to imitate the Son of God, because Paul was able to do so. And Paul did so by pleasing all men in all things. He was careful not to be offensive, he says. And now he's urging us to do the same. We learn from Paul that following Christ does not require a miracle. But what have we seen in Philippians 3? We have seen the determination to count all things lost for Christ and the determination to gain Christ at all costs. That's what it takes. And each of us has it within us, with the help of God, to so follow Jesus and likewise to follow Paul. But Paul, back here in Philippians 3:17, also said that we are to note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. So not only do I have Jesus as an example, not only do I have Paul as an example, and also Timothy and Epaphroditus that he mentioned in chapter 2, but Paul indicates right there in your home congregation, you have brothers and sisters who are following the example of Jesus Christ. Note those brothers and sisters and follow their example. And since rejoicing is a major theme in the book of Philippians, you know that illustration I've been using about the canary singing although he is caged? We've got people here who are just like that. We have here a sister, for example, who hobbles around with her walker. But look at her spirit. She has many health issues, in fact. But what an example this blessed sister is. I'd encourage you to follow her example. Another sister here has serious back problems. Now has learned that she has health problems. Is a recent widow. But she's a singing canary in her cage. Let's follow her example too. There's another brother and sister in this congregation who have little. She has almost no movement for her body. He has health issues, but walk into their home. And you know what the first question is that they'll ask you? How are you doing? And I always say, what do you mean, how am I doing? How are you doing? They're canaries singing in their cage. Brethren, imitate their example. Let's be like them. Now, Paul here speaks about an example or a pattern in Philippians 3:17. He's literally talking about a brushstroke. We've made a brushstroke for you to follow. And you know, most of us are like that. We can't create on our own. We can't trailblaze. But if someone just makes the brushstroke for us, we can imitate it. You know, like that Nike whoosh, I guess they call it? What a simple symbol. And yet, all you have to do is see that symbol, and you know exactly what the company is and what they make. I never would have come up with a symbol like that, but now I can draw it pretty good, I think. You know, when I was younger, I used to love to draw. I thought I was going to be an artist, but I never created anything on my own. I always had a picture or an object from which I drew. And I could see other people just sit down and just make up a drawing, and it looked like a perfect horse or a perfect car, you know, whatever they were drawing. But most of us are like the people to whom Paul's talking about here. Few of us are like Paul. We need an example. We need a pattern. We need instructions, blueprints, and pictures. There's this brother in Klamath Falls who built a huge, I mean, taller than this building, algae dryer. As probably most of you know, Upper Klamath Lake, the largest lake in Oregon, is just full of algae. Well, someone said, hey, it's raining lemons, let's make lemonade. So they figured out a way to dry this stuff and sell it and put it in products and people eat it. Well, this brother in Klamath Falls built this huge dryer. It's a fabulous piece of art and a very expensive piece of art, machinery. But he had just gone and seen another one in another place and remembered the whole thing in his mind. Never got blueprints or anything for it, and built this fabulous structure. It's incredible to see how he did it. Well, again, most of us just can't do something like that. We have to have those blueprints. Well, we've got it. in the life of Jesus, in the life of Paul, in the life of Timothy, in the life of Epaphroditus, and in the lives of brothers and sisters who are sitting right next to us here this morning. Look at how they deal with life and follow their examples. We can surely learn from the examples of others. I read of a banker many years ago who was quite famous in his day, and he was asked how he became head of the bank and how he became so powerful. And this is what he said. He said that at first he served as an office boy, and then one day the president of the company called him aside and said, "I want you to come into my office and be with me each day." And the young man replied, "But what could I do to help you, sir? I don't know anything about finances." So the president said, "Never mind that. You will learn what I want to teach you a lot faster if you just stay by my side and keep your eyes and ears open." And then later, this man says, "That was the most significant experience of my life. Being with that wise man made me just like him. I began to do things the way he did, and that accounts for what I am today." Now, I wonder what will happen if we look at our president in the Spirit, Jesus Christ. What will happen to my life if I watch how he dealt with issues and how he dealt with difficult people and how he dealt with his disciples and his family? And I tell myself, I'm going to do the same thing. Even if it hurts me, even if I have to swallow my pride, I'm going to do it. I wonder what will happen and how our lives will turn out. I think these words of Paul in Philippians 3:17 are crucial because, again, it's not that Paul is setting himself up as an example, as the ethical standard, but he's presenting Christ, we know throughout this book, as the ultimate standard in action and teaching and just how you deal with things. And Paul himself imitated Jesus, and so that's why we can imitate Paul, because really, we're not imitating Paul, we're imitating Christ, the one whom he's imitating. But he knew that many of the people that he had converted would imitate him, and that someday he's going to have to face Jesus himself. You know something? You don't even have to tell people to imitate you. People are going to imitate you anyways. I mean, even if it's just your own children. But there's people at work, there's younger people, people who are around us who imitate us. They watch us. They pick up on things. They like what we do. And so Paul knew, again, that he had to be careful. And he knew that someday he was going to stand before the Lord himself and give an account of how he lived. And perhaps that's why he said to the Corinthians, "But I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." That's 1 Corinthians 9:27. Well, how crucial that is. With whom am I walking? And who is the one that you want to be like? Oh, I hope you said Jesus, or someone who's imitating Jesus. If not, I hope that you've seen how important it is that you imitate Christ, because someday every single one of us shall finally see his face, whom we've been speaking about this morning, who we've been singing about, whose death we remembered in the Lord's Supper. We're going to see him. Are you ready then to die to yourself, to die to your old ways? And if you are, we need to bury you. That's what you do with dead people. You bury them. And that's why we have baptistry behind us, because we're not going to put you under the dirt. We're going to put you under the water. And you won't stay down there very long, just until you're all covered, and then we'll bring you back up. And the Bible then says that when you do that, you are now being raised to walk in newness of life. And that's what we want for every person who is gathered here today. And if you have not yet done it and you're ready, come forward right now as we stand and sing.